I'm Aaron.
I'm Michael.
And this is the Nathans and Roncast. How you doing, Michael?
I'm okay. You know, it's been a long few hours already, long day, but it's been relaxing all at once. We had a great CD release concert last night.
We did.
And to all of you who came out, it's probably months ago at this point, but
by the time you're hearing this.
Yeah. If we could record and release the same day, it'd be amazing, but
we're not that good.
No, no. So today we're doing a song called Without the Cold.
Without the Cold, which is sort of a winter song.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, we did a Kickstarter, I think, two albums ago,
mm-hmm.
and you'll hear more about it in the interview with Alan J. Prescott, but we put it out there that people could send information, a story, and we'll write a song with them. And Alan did. I love asking people who don't write songs very often. I'm like, just write a whole thing, right? And we could take pieces and ideas and put it into a song. And he sent me this thing about how melancholy is viewed as something negative, but to him, it's something beautiful. It's like winter without the cold. And when I read that, I went, oh, that's it right there. And so my songwriting brain just went to work. And these stanzas just, like, if there was a visual, a cartoon visual, it was like they were melting out of my eyes or my ears or just out of my forehead, if there was some way. It was just falling onto the page. And all of a sudden I typed out like 6 to 8, maybe 9 stanzas, 4-line stanzas, and put it together. And this is the only time I've sent something to you, Aaron, where you said, great, I just want to add a "the" at this spot.
Yeah, my contribution to the song was quite minor, because I could see that you had a vision and you were running with it. And the best thing I could do was just get out of the way.
But at the same time, like, we workshopped the song together, and there were certain elements that were very Michael Ronstadt-ish that you will hear in the instrumental section, where there's a time signature change.
That's right.
And we'll play a little bit of that. Now that you've heard it, one of the things about that is that I put that in all the choruses, which probably would have made it less accessible. And between you and Serenity Fisher is also a co-writer on this, I believe.
Yeah, she did make some contributions to this song.
Yeah.
And that's her voice that you hear there in the background.
Yeah, she sang harmony on the original demo. We actually took our demo that we recorded for Alan and sent
it in 2017, I think.
Yeah. It's, so this song has gone a long way. And then Greg Hugh Brady, our esteemed and genius recording engineer, mastermind behind making us sound good, he mixed it to match everything else so beautifully. We might even, in fact, what I want to do is I'm going to play a little sample of the demo.
The sounds of the hills reflecting, then it stops. Nothing makes it here in my very favorite spot. Sitting quietly, not thinking of the clock.
And then we'll play a sample of the final mix.
The sounds of the hills reflecting, then it stops. Nothing makes it here in my very favorite spot. Sitting quietly, not thinking of the clock.
And you could hear the difference between, you know, what we sent to Alan, which I think worked fine, but what Greg did, which just bumped it up. And it's just, you know, it's stunning what an amazing producer, co-producer, recording engineer can do. Because it's a lot of work to get what you hear in the room to translate mm-hmm. through microphones to sound just like what you did in the room. Yeah. You wouldn't think that, but it is.
Yeah, he, I mean, if you listen to our album Hang On for the Ride, which we did, you know, we did some of that with Ernie Tokay at his studio, but we did a fair amount of that, you know, on our own. But I think Greg, who we used for these last two albums, really has an engineering voice and a producing voice. It really comes out on this song.
And sometimes with Greg, he's like, no, trust me, I'll make it work. I'm like, what do you think, blah, 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 you know, like, and he'll say, no, I can get it to work, don't worry. And that's a, you know, an artist can really see that.
I've got to give you a lot of credit for having a vision for this song, but not just, this isn't just a soundscape. This is a song with a message, and that message is that when you're feeling low, that there's some comfort. I mean, Paul Simon said that, I felt so lonely, I took some comfort there, or something to that effect. And, but that's real. You know, that was just one line from Paul Simon. This is a whole song about just, you know, when you're low and you've been knocked down, that maybe there's a silver lining.
We recorded a lot of this
album
during the pandemic. We wrote and recorded. And with that time, whether you use it to create stuff or just to like breathe and take a break, we'll get through this. And I think without the cold has that feeling of like, well, it's not freezing cold out. It's a little stark, you know, I'm feeling melancholy. I'm not feeling all bubbly and bright, but you know, let me just live here for a little bit. And you might recharge your batteries. It might be an introvert thing, but for me, those moments can recharge my batteries. And I think for Alan J. Prescott, that was his idea. And this interview was fun because he is a man who has done many, many, many things.
In fact, Renaissance man.
He is. And we in fact interviewed another Renaissance person for the song Evening. Yeah. I mean, what's with these people? I mean, they do so many things. They're the type of people who get a job just so they can learn a new craft.
That's right. Kind of like Steve Martin. You know, there's a new book out called So Many Steves. It's an audio book.
Yeah.
These people are multi-layered.
I love it. You know, you don't just go like, oh, I got to get this job to get my insurance. You're like, no, I'm going to get a job to get a skill. I always said if I couldn't play music anymore, I'd go get a job. Well, I used to say developing photos, but that's not going to happen anymore. But it could be as an assistant at building parking meters. I might want to know how they build parking meters. I have no idea. You know, just what do I want to learn? You know, and it's amazing. You know, some people want to learn how to build a sailboat, even though they've been a full-time musician or just a video editor. I don't know. Whatever it is, do your passion. That's yeah, kind of what it is.
Life is short, you know. Jump in. Try it.
And much like this interview, this intro has been wandering around and wandering and wandering along the weeds.
Meandering, and, I think, yeah, is the word
meandering,
you're looking
for. Yeah, we've been meandering through many things. So we're going to get to it. Enjoy this interview with Alan J. Prescott. He is
fascinating.
Fascinating, and I think you're going to enjoy everything he has to say.
Just a lovely fellow.
Yeah. So thank you, Alan, for being a part of this. And here we go. Well, today our special guest is Alan Prescott, and he is a person of many, many talents in the art of creativity, from being an expert at wine to writing music, storytelling from this song, and all of the in-between. So welcome, Alan, to our Nathan's and Roncast.
Thanks for having me. Happy New Year. Good morning, all the rest.
You supported a Kickstarter, and one of the really generous donations you made was with the prize of having us co-write a song for you and with you. So you had sent an email with some basic information of what you were looking for, and boy, did it spark a cool song. And it's been a lot of years in the making. Like, we had the demo, and the demo was recorded well enough that we were able to add a few more little things and use the original vocals. And our engineer, Greg Hugh Brady, really just knocked it out of the park, getting the song to just feel like, oh yeah, this song is wonderful. And it's kind of a folky song, which I kind of write weird,
but I kept the weird at bay. You know, I there's a few 5/4 measures, but it balances out with a 3/4 measure. And in addition to Aaron, we brought in Serenity Fisher. So it's almost like a pop song with a bunch of writers just at the table. And everyone made the song a reality. So I'll let you take it from here and tell me how you perceived the whole process, the original idea. What made you think of melancholy, winter without the cold? It's not a negative thing. And I loved that idea, which is why I loved writing the lyrics and taking your words and putting them in there and working with you.
Well, I appreciate that. And the song was quite lovely, even in its demo stage. It was very nice. And a little bit long for a pop song, which is interesting. That's a positive thing.
Oh, good.
So you definitely went against expectations, which I think music should always do, by the way. If the idea is to create something that hasn't been created before, then you have your work cut out for you. It's very difficult. It's easier for me to write instrumental music, for example, than it is to write a song, even though I'm also a poet. I've written a lot of poetry. That being said, I think melancholy is not greatly covered in the field of music. It is covered a great deal in visual art. Of course, it's covered in cinema, and covered in literature a great deal, particularly the 20th century. But music, not so much. I have to really, I can think of two prominent examples. Two of my favorite songs happen to be songs of sort of about winter and about melancholy. Never very popular. These were great songs by two popular bands that never made it into FM or anything like that. Melancholy is not covered very much, particularly my idea about melancholy, which is that it's not a negative feeling. It's not sadness or depression. It's wanting to be with oneself for thoughts that make you introspective that you don't necessarily share with somebody else. What better time than the winter, for example, when there's nobody around, there's no one outside. It can be very quiet and still after a snowstorm, a perfect kind of opportunity to be with oneself. It doesn't even matter how cold it is, you're with yourself and you have the warmth of your own feelings. So melancholy is just one of those feelings that's not covered an awful lot. We hear a lot about sadness and grief and those kinds of things. The two songs I'm thinking about, by the way, if you're interested, Blood, Sweat, and Tears did a song called Sometimes in Winter. I want to say 1968, 69, beautiful, beautiful song from them. Absolutely gorgeous. It conjures up strong visuals and emotions. Also a song by the Rolling Stones from Goat's Head Soup called Winter. Very sweet song. It's all on the lines of Moonlight Mile, those kinds of rare Stones ballads that are very good. So anyway, I thought you guys hit the nail on the head with that piece. Very, very nice. And I heard the recent version just a couple of days ago. And it turned out quite well. I really enjoyed it very much.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
I love the idea of melancholy being okay. And as an introvert myself, I feel like I'm really happy there sometimes. Like, it's not even like this extreme happiness. It's just kind of like this, hey, this is really content and feels good. It's like a sitting on a nice comfy cloud, as you would imagine it might feel.
Yes.
And you're just kind of just chilling and enjoying it.
I'll speak to that for a couple of seconds. I think that extroverts experience melancholy as sadness and depression. Those of us like myself who have some minor depression and some mania experience melancholy as simply what it is. It's a comfort zone. Like, you know that there's an end point to it. As my brother once said, emotions have a beginning, a middle, and an end. Mm. And if you accept that, then you simply are waiting out for that right moment when the melancholy stops and something else begins, because it always does.
Yeah.
It's hard to, you know, to keep that in mind when you're in that state, but introverts are particularly, introverts have done very well during COVID, for example, because we've already been with ourselves many, many times. And so we already accept all the feelings we'll have as people who are not lonesome or lonely, but alone. There's a difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's been, the idea of just sort of accepting, like, it reminds me of summer camp when, you know, every day is like meticulously planned out and then it rains And there's just this feeling that like everything has been canceled that day, and you've lowered your expectations, and you've lowered the amount of work that's required of you, and just to be able to sort of enjoy nothing, to just sort of enjoy not having to achieve today, not having to. Not so much to be lazy, but to kind of revel in the simple things. And even if the simple things is just sitting on your couch with a cup of coffee, looking out the window, knowing, as you said, that there's an end point to this, that it can't go on forever.
I think melancholy is also linked to, or can be linked to disappointment and rejection. Melancholy might follow something like that in a person like me being rejected or disappointed. But it's not quite as sharp as it would be for somebody who relied a great deal on a particular achievement having been recognized and will fall into real deep depression about rejection or disappointment, something not happening. I'm very accepting, as you started talking about acceptance. When there's a change, you know, you can change yourself, or you can run away, or you can accept. There aren't a lot of choices about it. We can't really change people, as we know. We can change ourselves, and it's still a lot of effort. And so you just have to be with yourself at those times and realize I'm still a human being. If anything, I'm maybe more of a human being because I feel those things and I don't reject them.
Yeah. You know, I remember being on tour a lot of years with Ronstadt Generations, and at some point my friend Mary Rosas decided to, she's like, I'm doing this coaching thing. She was a former therapist, had a lot of amazing clients, and then bought a piece of land in Arizona and became just a full-time artist. And then she was doing like some of the like the phone coaching on the phone, and which required a small certification, but it had a lot of stuff she knew. And she's like, would you like to be a guinea pig? I'm like, okay. And I'm like, it's not therapy, is it? And she's like, no. And then later I find out, she's like, yeah, I did some therapy on you. Like, she's like, I knew you could handle it. Like, so, but sure. It was one of the best things. And we start out with the usual coaching thing. Let's make a pie chart of what you hope you want. And I didn't have a lot of resources. I was living in Greater Philly, 2012-ish, 2011-ish, not a lot of money. Like, I didn't know if I was going to have a roof over my head the next month.
Welcome to my world.
Yeah, it was kind of like, it was kind of crazy. Like, I had a lot of comfort in living in my car as a backup plan. You know, like, wow. it was amazing that the car was there. I was like, I could live here if I needed to, you know. It's a roof, you know, we can get places. And so I was so thankful to have that comfort. But when she started, but being on tour was also tough because we were touring for like 2 months out of the road. And I, as I always say, I was doing 350 shows a year and barely scraping by, you know, like that was the reality.
Yikes.
And so when I started working on myself, it was interesting watching how other people reacted to me not reacting. It was very cool to see because it seemed like people were changing around me. But what was happening is I was getting more in touch with how I felt in those moments and going, oh, well, that's an interesting feeling. And, you know, and it was really neat because it helped almost invite the energy I wanted around me. And, also, it kind of trained people around me what to expect.
And they're training us as well. I think it's important to remember that we're all in motion. Okay. There's 6 or 7 or 8 billion of us now, and we're constantly in motion, constantly changing. There's nothing static. There's no such thing as a photograph or a snapshot of the world at any present time, right? So we perceive ourselves changing sometimes when it's really other people who are changing, and the other way around. It's like traffic. Like, you can be sitting at a stoplight, but everyone else is still moving everywhere else, and you're flowing into traffic and hoping not to die today. Because everybody else is in motion and they're not thinking about us in particular or even our vehicle. We just hope everybody obeys the rules.
Yeah.
And in society, we don't always obey the rules either. Somebody can be unpredictable one day to the next, you know. Because it's all about change, that's the fountain for literature and music and everything else. It's how we deal with those changes. Just the way music has changed in the last 10 years, never mind from when I was listening to the Supremes in 1966, you know. We've gone through so many changes. So society is changing, culture is changing, countries change, people change. The way we live is constantly in flux. There's never one moment you can say, well, this is the present, because that was an hour ago. I was having breakfast. So people change. You are changing as you go through therapy or not. And people therapize us. We therapize them without our knowing it. It's really quite fascinating.
Yeah.
We rely on other people for our sense of society and culture. At the same time, inside ourselves, I think we have our own special culture that is recognizable from the time we were younger. There's always a core of us that remains essentially the same.
Well, and that's kind of where the lyrics and the songs also hit with me, because it is that culture, that personality you have inside, that world you live in your mind. And I know that not everyone has a dialogue in their mind. I've heard that, like I do, you know, I can turn it on and off, which I hear is rare. And I'm also, when I take 10-hour drives, I was reminded that it's kind of strange to drive in silence, but I will drive for 5 hours in silence because I just love watching the trees and how the road curves and all this stuff. But it's my own little world. That's how I've created the world in my mind. So I'm always curious, Aaron, because I haven't really heard from you. I have some friends who, one of my good friends, from youth orchestra and stuff, I always say I want to jump inside his brain for like 30 seconds and then I'm going to get out of there, you know, because I'd like to just take some insight, but I know his brain's like swirling.
Yeah, sure.
So I always wonder, like, if, you know, that whole idea of like everyone's own little world it's very significant to each of us, you know, and obviously not everyone else is really caring too much or paying attention. I mean, they could care if they're close to us, but they're doing their own thing. So, what are all your minds like, you know, like, does this ring true for you, Aaron, like in your mind?
You know, sometimes I'll be driving and I'll turn off the music and, maybe it's nighttime and I'm just kind of zoning out, and then I'll open my eyes. I mean, they've been open the whole time, but I'll suddenly...
pretty good.
Yeah.
Dang, that's a mad skill, dude, to be driving basically blind.
It's Zen directing.
Yeah. In a couple of years, we'll all be driving self-driving cars. We'll all be riding in self-driving cars.
It'll all be robots living vicariously for us, and so...
Yeah.
I saw something from BuzzFeed last night on robots. Anyway, going to the idea of thought patterns and inside personality that no one really knows anything about. I do think people like myself with a hive mind that is absolutely constantly there isn't a moment's peace, if you will, but it's me, and so. There's no auditor inside me looking at that part of me saying, well, that's crazy, because I am that crazy. Do you know what I'm saying? I think Michael knows what I'm talking about. It's like there's nobody inside myself to check that part of me. Maybe there is, but that guy's out to lunch. So my mind is constantly thinking about many overlapping things, I guess because of my exposure through the travel, living in many different places. Having made music, having made art, having a book collection, you name it, being a photographer, working in a bar, there's so much overlap among all of these things. There are connections I would feel that nobody else could possibly feel because that's me. Somebody who lives indoors for most of their lives, or people who are out of contact through whatever reason, accident, or plan, have less complex lives in the sense that they know fewer people, haven't been as many places, don't have as many interests, and therefore their life is actually quite, probably quite enjoyable. It's not ignorance is bliss, but there's just less to keep track of. I don't have a linear mind. It's constantly, it's like a bowl of spaghetti. I don't have time to pull it all apart right now. I just want to eat it.
So. Yeah. Well, let's begin to pull it apart a little bit. At the time that we met you, you were running, what was the name of the wine bar?
It was a Black Walnut Winery's tasting bar and tasting room and wine bar. There's a mouthful.
In Phoenixville. Right, yeah. Phoenixville, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And we actually played there one night, and it was very enjoyable. Even as I'm not a wine person, but that's just a personal preference. But
that's okay. I make up for it.
Yes. but where did your journey begin?
I thought you might ask me that. So I while I was taking a shower, I thought, let me do what they call the elevator story, which is you're in an elevator. Somebody asks you, what's your deal? You have 84 floors. Okay.
Big building.
Yeah, I know. Well, no, that is, yeah. The sketch overall is this. I was born in Western Massachusetts in the mid-50s.
Where?
A town called Greenfield, which is the county seat of Franklin County.
Yeah, I know where that is. I think Tracy Grammer had some.
Yep. Several celebrities have lived in that area very quietly. In any case, it's quite rural. I was born there, lived there for a short time, in Vermont. My dad was a traveling salesman at that time, not particularly successful. So we moved to different territories when that was a thing. Eventually, I ended up in Connecticut. I grew up in Sandy Hook, Connecticut.
Oh, boy.
Yes, that's another story.
Yeah.
I had a wonderful childhood. My father bought his first house in Sandy Hook for $17,500, if you can believe it. A little rancher, three bedrooms and all that. I had a wonderful childhood there from 10 to about 17 years old. So say from 65 to the time I graduated high school. My parents divorced. My mom came out as a lesbian. I did some time at a Jewish Leninist Marxist resort in upstate New York. Where I met all the people who were to influence my decision to move to New York City, which I had never visited. Started off in New York City in 1975 on the Lower East Side.
And how old were you when you first arrived in New York?
1920. Started off, I was with my girlfriend at that time, who I had just met. We ended up living together for about 21 years. Started off in the Lower East Side. I was a typesetter, messenger, florist. I started my own typesetting business and became madly successful. Traveled the world. Ended up buying my own place in Greenwich Village, where we lived the entire time, pretty much. Sold it for $1 bajillion. Moved to California. Became a beach bum. Ran out of money. Wow. My dad died. I moved to New Hampshire from California, by the way, which was quite a thing.
Oh,
went
boy.
Through 10 live, freeze, or die.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, I did all of those things almost. Okay. Almost living, almost dying, but plenty of freezing. Took over my dad's condo after he died. Eventually sold that. Moved down to Pennsylvania after that. I had never really visited Pennsylvania, but I'd been all around the world. I loved Philly, but I couldn't afford to live there. Now, I moved to Pennsylvania during the recession, which, let's say, it was 2008. Just after Obama's election, the first time. And so here I am today. I could not find work in graphic design anywhere for what I felt I was worth. I could not get work. I eventually took a job delivering meals in Pottstown, which is now where I live. I did that. I did landscaping. I can't even imagine what else. And eventually I landed the job at Black Walnut Winery. They were looking for a wine guru or somebody who could be good with people. Well, at least I was a guru. I'm not sure I'm good with people. I didn't kill anybody or anything. and so that was the, you know, that's my recent life. The last 10 years were there, and then I left. But I worked for two wonderful people, two great Phoenixvillians, who had the winery itself in Sadsburyville. You might remember, Michael. And they let me run the place pretty much on my own. I didn't even have any help the last 5 or 6 years, and ran everything. Did promotion, wine tastings, booked the music, stayed until 11, 1 o'clock in the morning to clean up, back on Sunday, and did that for about 10 years. So
I remember you talking about how you were just kind of on your own, because I was like, how are you affiliated? Do you work with them a lot? I was amazed how independently run that room was, and you would never know. It's kind of like when I went to a restaurant once in Fairfield, Ohio, that we had like 12 people, and we didn't know there was one person in the kitchen, and they were also serving us, but they did so well that they just knocked it out of the park, and we could have guessed there was a whole staff back there. And that's how it felt working with you. Is like you made it happen. So,
well, speaking to that, and also this ties in actually with music a little bit, so I'll get there. I'm not a team player. And I'm very unapologetic about it. But what's interesting about that is that it used to be a lot easier before our intensely social culture to be a standalone unit. I'm a complete autodidact. Almost literally everything in my life that I know about, I taught myself. I'm not a team player. Like, I can't be in a band. I couldn't, quite apart from whether I'm talented or anything like that. I don't have the talents of working with people. That is a special talent that should not be underestimated. I like making music alone. I like doing everything. I like running the tasting room alone. I wasn't a manager type. I can't tell somebody what to do. People are autonomous units. I was never going to be a good manager. When I ran my business in New York, it was just me and a trusted freelancer. That's it. And so I would rather not have anybody work for me. I will do it. I will fail or I'll succeed on my own way. I'm not saying one is better than the other. I'm just saying that's just my style to this day.
Well, Michael, you know, this album, we're taking a little break here to tell you that before we made this album, we made an album called Shadow of the Cyclone. We put a lot of love and TLC into it.
I like that album.
I like that album too. We're just about finished with it when the Lysol came out in March of 2020. And
did that Lysol have a lot of legs.
Like a
house millipede or centipede.
Yeah.
Lots of Lysol everywhere.
But, you know, we never got to do album release shows all over the country for Shadow of the Cyclone. And I've got hundreds of those albums sitting in my basement, and I would love to send them to our listeners.
Please do. I believe you can order that album off of the michaelronstadt.com website. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, please send us a note on our Facebooks and Instagrams and the messaging. If you send us a request, we will mail it to wherever you want, and you could pay through PayPal or Zelle or Venmo, whatever you want to do. We want you to hear our music. Honestly, if you bake a cake and mail it to us and it's still good, it's vegan, we'll send you a CD. I mean, whatever you want, don't do that.
Pay me with a cake, yes.
Yeah, don't
make a cake.
Yeah, yeah. If you make a very artistic looking cake inside of a snow bubble shaky thing, that was really descriptive.
I like it. But the point being, we don't want this album to get lost in the shuffle. It was a good album. We put a lot of love into it. It was a dark album. It was about the period just before the 2020 elections, kind of capturing our mindset then. But I think the songs still hold up.
They hold up, and they fit. I think they'll make you think.
Check out songs like Strongman.
Strongman.
That was a co-write that we really worked for, and I think it worked well. And just like we have Serenity Fisher on Without the Cold on harmonies and co-writer, she played piano, and that hook at the beginning is the creme de la creme of what makes that song. It's so good. So,
that's right. And she was the ghost hunter on Haunted House.
Oh man, yeah. So anyway, if even just to hear Serenity Fisher's contributions, please listen to the album and follow us on Spotify
if you haven't already.
Yeah, if you're listening on Spotify, follow us. And if you want a physical copy, please get it right away. We'll send it to you.
That's right.
So we're gonna come back to our part two.
Part two of our conversation
with
Alan J. Prescott.
You've seen all walks of life. It sounds like for you, going through all these variations of what life's bringing you and enjoying the fruits of that, you know, being able to see the world. And it sounds like you went from being able to afford a lot to not being able to afford much, kind of by choice, but probably life circumstances brought you to those situations. Is there a thread that's always carried you through among these various things you've learned through experience and teaching yourself, and being that, you know, one person boss, like we all are, we're very independent. We're our own bosses, right? You know, is there a thread that carries you through, that you can kind of put a finger on?
I think so. I think it goes back to the busy mind thing. Busy minds are always looking for something to grasp onto, as if you're kind of flailing around for a thread to grab. And so when you have a lot of threads, a lot of passions, a lot of obsessions, a lot of things that one wants to do, there's never a lack of something for me to do. I never get bored. And so the downside of that is that it allows you, you're not as present as many people, quite absent-minded. I'm not in the moment a lot of the time. I'm in a future moment, which is not here. It's already a figment of my imagination, but I grasp towards it anyway. So what keeps me going, I think, is that the meaning of my life is just that, the constant moving forward and finding a new passion or something different or interesting. Mm-hmm. I don't need to go to any more places, but that's because I've been to 30 countries. I don't need to add another one. I'm done. I've already jumped out of an airplane. That's good. That's plenty. You know, like I've already made 6 hours of instrumental music, 85 compositions. I'm not going to write another one. I've already had a recording studio and a camera. But I'm ready for whatever else I haven't done. And that means everything else that's out there. Mm. So it's the constant moving forward until, of course, eventually I'm not on the planet anymore. My life will not have meaning if I spend a little bit too much time in introspection, because unless it leads to something I'm going to be doing, it's a waste of my time. So I can be melancholy, but only rarely, because I want to snap out of it and get doing something I feel productive.
So what is the meaning? I mean, what if you're trying to derive meaning from it all? What's the destination? Where are you hoping to get to? If it all works out.
Well, let me give you a little thought experiment to put that in perspective, if I might. I've never done videos or film or anything like that. Not really. Although I have a fantastic video of Michael playing cello during Comfortably Numb at a Diving Cat studio. It's brilliant. Like, if I only made one video in my life, that is it, you know. But I once had this idea for a video where, picture this, it's a 90-minute movie. All right. All you see is basically a black screen to start with. It's the history of the world, 4 billion years on our planet. And each human life on the planet is like a little light, little LED that goes on. Okay. And imagine there's nothing at first. It starts to burst out of Africa at some point with points of light. It turns out for every frame of the movie, you're catching 13 seconds of a life, okay?
Oh, wow.
Each life is 13 seconds. And so this thing spreads out over the whole planet. This is how brief life is. And so the real treasuring of life is not the recognition of its length, but its brevity. The meaning is life itself, because there's all this time we spent not being in existence. We come into existence for this admittedly brief time, and then we are gone. If you're going to find meaning in life, it is really during this 50, 70, 80, 90 years or whatever. My mother's 87. She's still with me, you know, but she's the only one left from her, so. And she enjoys life very much. But as long as you have your health and your mind, you have your friends, you have something you love to do, I don't see why life needs to have any more meaning than that. I'm not a religious person, but those who are have a different set of meanings, and that's fine for them. So, but people who don't find any meaning, I don't know what to do about that. It's not something you can give somebody.
Well, where do you find the meaning in your day-to-day?
The meaning is simply life itself, simply being, first of all, do no harm. Even if you can't help, do no harm consciously. That lets everybody else do what they want to do. I'm very much a person who's in favor of autonomy. You find meaning where you're going to find it. If you spend too much of your life looking for meaning, I believe you also won't find it. It's under a rock very close to you. It's not as far as you have to go. But meaning, I think, is achieved for many people through music, through culture. If we don't have music, my girlfriend Sandy was once a neighbor with a guy who said, "I don't like music."
Wow.
I know,
people out there that don't like any music. When Leonard Cohen said that in Hallelujah, "You don't really care for music, do you?" I thought, who doesn't care for any music?
Right.
But there are people.
I ran into someone who didn't like nature. He grew up in Olympia, Washington.
Olympia, Washington.
And he's like, "I like cities. I like people and cityscapes." I'm like, okay. And that's I'm like,
but yeah, sure. Yeah.
Foodie. I mean, who doesn't like some kind of food?
I happen to have known somebody who actually said to me that she didn't like food.
Wow.
Yeah.
So there is always one example, because you know something about the standard distribution spectrum, right? There's the hump in the middle, and then tails off on both sides.
Right.
There's always somebody at one extreme out there. You know, I don't like food. You know, I don't like nature. I don't like music. Mm-hmm. I think all of us have some appreciation for nearly everything we come in contact with. Hopefully, we all expose ourselves to different things. You don't have to like everything, but showing an appreciation for the fact that somebody else likes that thing is kind of cool. I like a wide range of music. I mean, my goodness. But I've also lived a long time. You guys are younger, but you have access to that music. But what you don't have access to is the cultural context in which that music took place.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a criticism. It's just an observation that I was not there when my dad was listening to the music in the 40s. So I can't really know. It doesn't speak to me. But what I do know is that music as we conceive it now, contemporary music, everything from Led Zeppelin, the Beatles, Frankie Valli, to Jason Mraz, we can all kind of equally enjoy that music. It comes out of a shared cultural context, whereas our context is nothing like the 40s, but very much like the 70s and 80s. So we have that common ground.
Music tends to
build on itself over time, and you never get to see the foundation.
The foundation is well known to me because I lived through that. People in my generation, we started off with 19th Nervous Breakdown from the Stones. You know, that was a really different. I mean, the Stones are highly negative, very cynical, very misogynistic too, as well. Then you had the Beatles, brilliant. Still to this day, A Day in the Life is probably my favorite song of all time.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Because it marked the beat. When I first heard that song as a kid, I was astounded. There had been nothing written like A Day in the Life, one of the most depressing and frank songs about confusion, the meaning of life, how quickly a life can end, you know. And that whole album, after I got the album and listened to that whole thing, it's just the idea of the Beatles using the studio as an instrument itself was the beginning. Brian Wilson only scratched the surface with Pet Sounds. Now, see, he wasn't a team player. That's why he didn't get anywhere. The Beatles were team players, and so that's the advantage. Those guys were always working together, especially at that time. So that kind of music is, it seems kind of banal now because we've been through a lot of cynicism, Led Zeppelin and death metal and you name it, you know. There's just a lot of stuff out there that's heavily sexualized, heavily contextualized with the changes since Vietnam. But at the time the Beatles were writing that, they were into the Maharishi, they had just been to India, it was peace and love and all of that. Very interesting how those tropes began back then, but we take them for granted now.
And they were building on Chuck Berry and Little Richard.
Ultimately, and they were. What a different sound they got. The Rolling Stones built on that saying, the blues, you know, three-bar blues and all that. And to this day, still play pretty much blues, country, rhythm and blues. But the Beatles moved on.
How do you think that the pandemic is affecting how we perceive music, how we enjoy music?
I don't know how...
Where music is going.
I don't know where music is going. I don't follow, I have to confess, I don't follow a lot of contemporary music. I do hear some, there's some good radio stations in the area, MGK, what's the other one? The one that plays some like LED sound system, stuff like that, like current people. I don't hear a lot that I like. You know, I guess because I have heard so much. I'm saturated with music. I put it on in the morning while I make breakfast. It's on all day long. I'm just saturated with the Brian Eno and the Stones and Peter Gabriel and Led Zeppelin and Porcupine Tree, Pink Floyd. Like, I have enough. I don't need to listen to another singer-songwriter from college complaining about why his girlfriend is not in the same city. No. Look at me, please. Yeah, right. I've had enough, you know, for every Matt Keane or whatever. I just feel like the last music I really enjoyed a lot, Porcupine Tree. I love them a great deal. Progressive.
I'm going to have to look
them up.
You
want to cut off soon.
Oh, sorry. I'll have to look them up because I don't know Porcupine Tree.
You, Michael. You will love Porcupine Tree. Aaron, I'm not so sure, but comment. I'm just saying, if your mind works the way I think it does, you will love Porcupine Tree. It doesn't even matter what you pick up.
Okay.
It doesn't matter because every single track is unbelievable. You can sample a lot of it on YouTube. You can check out Blackest Eyes as a great track to sort of go, yeah, I think I want more of that sort of thing. But I also like some of my favorite bands are like the Cocteau Twins. You know, what they call, Dream Pop or whatever.
Oh,
but yes. I love the hard stuff too, but I don't know what's happening like currently. So during the pandemic, I played mostly my 35,000 songs on my iTunes, you know, and I have it on home sharing, so I can pump that to my phone and Bluetooth upstairs. And I have endless amount of music to listen to. But I always start off with the Rolling Stones, just because it's not even my favorite band, but they have the right energy for that. Roxy Music is my favorite band. Roxy Music.
Oh, okay. Nice.
No one even listens to Roxy Music anymore, but I saw them on the 50th anniversary tour in at the Man in Philly in September. Fantastic show, unbelievable. Roxy Music is to me what the Rolling Stones is pretty much to everybody else. Yeah. Anyhow, so during the pandemic, a lot of musicians had to go indoors. They had to be with their loved ones. If they were extroverts, they were going to be disappointed. Those of us who were already introverted had tons of music to surround ourselves with anyway and share it with somebody if we lived with someone. I feel bad for people who were alone during the pandemic, didn't have anybody, they couldn't get together with anyone, and they were stuck with whatever they could do to keep themselves occupied and having meaning in life. Crank the music up. I can't think of anything else. Better than watching television all day, right?
Yeah.
Dance around. And if you can't socialize, dance.
That's true. That's true.
Just be with yourself. Be melancholy. You know, whatever. Wait it out. It'll end pretty soon, as it is now.
You know, that's true. You know, we're recording this on December 31st, 2022. Look outside. It's gloomy. There's no snow on the ground, but, you know, wait a couple of days and maybe there will be. And you could sit there, stare out your window and be melancholy. But but as you said, you know, you wait long enough. By the time that people are hearing this, it's going to be bright outside and the world will have come alive. And
that's right. Well, as I used to say where I grew up, if you don't like the weather, wait a minute.
Yeah. Well, a lot of places are like that too. You get when I visit North Wales, UK, they're like, "Yeah, it might be raining now, but it'll be sunshine for part of the day." And that's how it was in Tucson when you got a rainy day. It was on and off, and I love that variability that life brings, because you're never you're never quite. You're not stuck in a situation, you know. There's always, you look out the window and see there can be a change on the horizon, and kind of neat. So
there can be, and if you don't have changes on the horizon, you can bring them indoors through activities that I think a lot of people did during the pandemic that didn't necessarily think of. Pick up a book. I must have read, I don't think I'm exaggerating, 40 or 50 books since the pandemic. But also music, and also going online and looking for interesting things. You know, I write for Wikipedia. That's another thing I do. Spend 8 or 10 hours a day editing Wikipedia.
Yeah,
there's always something to do to shift the energy, if I could put it that way.
Yeah. Well, and you know, just to kind of carry us to. Almost a final thought situation, not quite a Jerry Springer final thought, but
thank you.
but what I'm thinking of actually, I've met Jerry Springer. He's a very kind gentleman, and he does a podcast in Cincinnati. So
does he?
I played on his podcast once years ago, and
maybe he'll play on ours.
Cool. Yeah, man. Yeah. He, in fact, gave my Aunt Linda a key, like a. Not the actual key to Cincinnati, but he was trying to bring music into Cincinnati. And my Aunt Linda was given a key to Cincinnati at some point, along with a bunch of other musicians, like you mentioned. You know, he was trying to really, he was a young mayor and he had his faults, but he was trying to bring music and arts to Cincinnati. And one could say they're still trying, but they have a lot of good arts in Cincinnati. But, you know, just thinking of, you know, kind of how, I think there's a lot of positivity with what you're saying. And I think a lot of silver lining that one can find. And I think just the idea of like, read a bunch of books. For me, I dream albums. I create albums. I have a bunch of music that I put out during the pandemic. I've been doing a weekly YouTube video for 2 years now. Whether people watched or not, I do it and I enjoy it. So, and I think... that all came out of that melancholy we were stuck in for so long. And, you know, you kind of make it what you want. And that's easier said than done, obviously. But I'm just
thankful. It's a matter of being resourceful. You know, it's like we are surrounded more than any time in history, I think. We're surrounded by the tools that allow us to have a different kind of life for that moment, to shift.
Yeah.
The most resourceful. Don't get desperate. You know, we look for something to, okay, well, I can't do that now. Let me shift into something else. That's a talent in itself. A lot of people are easily bored because they can't think of something else to do. And it's not a criticism. It's just an observation.
Yeah.
you can find something else to do. We can make music. We can dance. We can get out a piece of paper and write something. We can do it on the computer, and we still have our computer, or something that wasn't available to people in the 50s or 60s or 70s.
Yeah.
Well, we had music.
You know, I think that's a really good thought to just kind of sit on and say that, you know, I hope that our conversation has helped someone who hasn't felt very creative about what to do, you know, if whatever their life is bringing them. Maybe it'll inspire someone to search for that thing, you know. As creative artists, it's easy for us to just put our finger on it. I think for a lot of people, sometimes it's not as easy. And I think the being comfortable with trying something new without any expectations and doing it in your own little world and just enjoying the process, that's kind of what I'm hearing and seeing. And I'm just thankful that we could talk about and be inspired by the ideas that this song were created from, and that the ideas that this song, you know, pushed forward in this conversation.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
And I wonder if Aaron, do you have any final thoughts on?
Yeah, I mean, this has been fascinating, and just to explore the idea of melancholy, and you know, and Alan, you really helped me to re-envision what it means to be quiet, what it means to be. You know, melancholy and yet not, you know, if it's low, you know, to go low purposefully rather than, you know, as a victim, to just sort of enjoy being down on the ground, looking up.
Right. Nothing wrong with that. It's not trauma. It's an opportunity.
It is. Well, Alan, thank you for taking the time to speak with us. We're honored that you made some time to talk with us and to tell us about your life, and it's fascinating to see the world through your eyes.
No, the pleasure's all mine. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, and we'll catch up in person hopefully at some point.
You know? We definitely will. I'll call you on that. Okay.
Yeah. Please do. Yeah.
All right, Alan Prescott.
Yeah. Thank you.
Happy New Year, guys.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Well, that was fun.
I enjoyed that a lot. And I think I didn't know where it was going to go. I didn't know how it was going to end. Sometimes I thought it never would end. And I was okay with that.
Because it was that interesting. And it was great that he was so trusting of us and willing to open up in such an interesting and meaningful way.
You know, as musicians and songwriters, we get to meet people on a very personal level in a way that other, you know, jobs and stuff, they don't always allow.
I mean, no, even when I'm a journalist, when I was a journalist, you know, I walk up to people, I ask them personal questions, and, you know, you're kind of automatically on your guard. Whereas if a musician asks you a question, I think people are a little more trusting.
Yeah, it feels like people are off book, which is good. And I, you know, one of the things that about this interview and Alan is, like, we've known him as a wine connoisseur. Mm-hmm. We've known him as a music writer through his SoundCloud. So if you find his music there, it's really fascinating what he does. He's a good writer. You know, like he writes instrumentals that really take you on a journey. And he just enjoys being in the moment. So that's what this interview was. And we want to share the song with you since you've been waiting so patiently. So without any delay, here's the song Without the Cold in its entirety.
Along gray earth, soft shadows song. Winter without. I walk along gray earth, soft shadows song. The sounds of the hills reflecting, then it stops. Nothing makes it here in my very favorite spot. Sitting quietly, not thinking of the clock. No ticking do I hear, so simple in this spot. No ticking do I hear, so simple in this spot. Tales of past lives in this sanctuary loft. Fable that flew high, quickly was forgot. Melodies melt hearts of those in deep, deep thought. I tend to like it here in this melancholy spot. I tend to like it here in this melancholy spot. Winter without the cold. I walk along gray earth, soft shadow song. Winter without the cold. I walk along gray earth, soft shadow. Brighten up, let sunshine walk on in. It tries to draw me out, yet I do prefer it dim. Trickling through the pines, soft breezes sing a hymn. Words of revelry and my melancholy grin. Words of revelry and my melancholy grin. Close my eyes for me inside a gentle cloud. Let the walls keep out the disappointing sounds that live beyond this wall, outside melancholy grounds. Blinding all our eyes from the knots that we are wound. Blinding all our eyes from the knots that we are wound.
I feel warmer already.
Yeah. So you've been listening to the Nathans
and
Ron Cast. Aha, we said cast at the same time.
We did.
Well, that's good. You know, we're by the last episode of this series, we will have our intros and outros down. But until then, I hope you have a great week.
Do you have any words of wisdom? A word of wisdom?
Ooh, a word. You know what? I think mutable.
Mutable. Okay. Well, you can mute me when I say meandering, which I think we used earlier in this episode. That was today's Wordle, by the way, was meandering.
Yeah. And yeah, you know, like these podcasts.
You don't do Wordle, do you?
I don't do Wordle. They kind of frustrate
me. You would have known that was a joke because it's only five letters. Anyway, if I have to explain the joke,
oh my God.
It doesn't matter.
See, I avoid Wordle like it's the plague. It taunts me. But some people like Wordle. I love working with Duolingo and trying to figure out Welsh words and how to spell them. So,
Like Smoothio.
If you remembered the word Smoothio for ironing in Welsh, by this point, we'll send you a prize. But yeah, so malleable and mutable, that's our wisdom. Have a good week.
Meandering. Peace. Okay.
The far sea croons itself to rest. A soft